This is episode 96. We just don't have a clue, and that's good. Coming up this week, we discuss testing, Braun GP, and Bernie's plane. So the entire F1 world is in countdown mode.
Yeah.
Isn't it brilliant?
It is brilliant. We haven't really been able to enjoy it this week because we've had some technical issues to overcome.
Yep.
And I'm not entirely convinced that I've followed every single bit of F1 news.
Well, so that's what we're here for.
I'm relying on your good self and everybody who's following in the live comments to correct me and point out things that I've missed and things that I've got wrong, because I'm not entirely clued up as I might usually be.
Well, let's get started. Good week, bad week. It's been a good week for Panasonic, as Toyota accrediting them as a big reason why they decided to stay in the sport. After loads of speculation from us, Toyota have admitted that things were tough and Tadashi Yamashima had to plead with the board to let them stay. He said that the renewed Panasonic contract really helped, despite their own financial difficulties, so wins are needed.
Well, they've been saying that since last year. Wins are essential. However, wins or win? And I would argue win is essential. One win is needed. I don't think they need to win more than one race this year, and I don't think they need to set their heights any higher than that. Although, even if it comes down to the last race, they do have to win one of them.
It's been a bad week for the Mark Webber Challenge, as it won't be held in 2009. Due to economic pressures, the charity event will be skipping a year, but all involved hope it will be back in the future, with Webber suggesting it could even expand beyond Tasmania.
Well, okay, I mean, we thought this might happen anyway because of his leg. He's saying it's nothing to do with his leg. It's all to do with finances. I'm surprised that they don't have enough money to continue, but they may have enough money to come back bigger. That seems like an unusual approach. Just not do it one year and then to come back twice as big the next. I'm not entirely sure what else they could do to make it bigger. I mean, it'd be good if it would be, but you can only cycle for so long before you get a bit tired.
It's been a good week for Brendan Hartley as the youngster from New Zealand gets the role as reserve driver for both Red Bull and Toro Rosso. Sato was rumoured to be in line for this role, but that has come to nothing as Hartley gets the gig. It's extremely unlikely, of course, but what if a driver is ill from both teams?
Or if a driver from both teams have an accident together,
yeah,
and knock each other out. Surely it's got to be a million to one chance of that happening.
Well, of course, but it could happen.
Yes.
Anything is possible.
This is a good way of saving money, though. Have one test driver for two teams. It's a good, you know, it seems like a good cost-saving measure.
It's been a bad week for Euro Disney, as the authorities have picked a track to whip into shape in France and present it to Bernie, and it's not Euro Disney. I'm not actually sure if it was one of the five options that were being selected from, but the chosen track is north of Paris. Once construction is complete, they're hoping the track will be ready for the 2011 season.
It's looking lovely. It's green, it's pastures, it looks nice. From what we've seen, I mean, it's only been CGI renders. What we've seen is very good. Looking forward to seeing it. Better than manuals, we would hope. News
and views. So, it's old news by now, but there's just a few things we wanted to cover about Braun's triumphant return to action. Firstly, Nick Fry turned up to the photo meeting and suggested an announcement about Honda was coming soon. Then a day or so later, the announcement came. Why couldn't he just tell us the day?
They must have been dotting the I's and crossing the T's. It may not have been quite... You can imagine he would have wanted to, and he was probably desperate to say, it's all really good, and just stop hassling me. He didn't say very much at the photo meeting, actually. He said as little as he could get away with.
Just turned up for the photo.
Yeah, he did the photo call. He left as soon as he possibly could do. We don't know what he really thinks about this. He's not said much since Braun GP was announced. It doesn't feature his name, which is surprising. And presumably he's going to take a little bit of a back seat now that Ross is in charge.
So like you say, the team were revealed as Braun GP, which, by the way, is a really annoying name, because in F1 Minute this week, I had to say Jenson Button was leading the timesheets in the Braun, which just sounds stupid. But the car is strikingly white with black and fluorescent yellow stripes, presumably until it gets some sponsors, and then it might change a little bit.
It may retain that colour scheme. You just don't know what they're going to be doing with it at the moment. It looks like it needs sponsors. One would assume that that's part of the plan. It could also be said that they're trying to downplay how good the car looks by making it look silly, and it does look silly.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a championship contender. However, if you look past the rather bland and somewhat garish livery, there are some nice details within the aero work of that car, and it may well be a good little motor.
Well, then they went and posted crazy times in testing, didn't they?
Yes.
Barrichello topped the timesheets for a couple of days, posted the fastest time of the whole week.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's an element of non-sandbagging. What's the opposite of sandbagging?
Showboating.
Going really fast.
Showboating.
Yes.
In order to get sponsors.
Yeah, there may be an element of that, but also it looks like that car has had some serious work done to it.
They've been working on it for a very long time. We know that. We know it's since the French Grand Prix that the work was signed off. We know they didn't do very much work to the chassis last year because it was a dog and they knew they couldn't be bothered to race it and they didn't want to develop with it. And they brought some minor updates to a couple of races, but really didn't do a lot with it. The only thing they actually introduced of any note last year was the traffic lights, which mimicked Ferraris.
Yes.
We haven't seen those in testing. Presumably they haven't had much time to test them. It's probably low down their priority list, but we know they had that in mind.
They might not be able to afford fancy traffic lights. They might have to slum it with a lollipop.
Well, that's interesting because James Allen on his new blog, is it still a new blog? By the way, it's quite old now. It's been going a little while. He's now an official blogger, isn't he? I think we can call him that. On James Allen's blog, he said their budget is sanked. Yeah, the TV monies and the money that Honda are paying to bail Braun GP out and you know, to so they don't have to ditch the team, basically the face-saving money, is not bad. It's enough to compete with. So maybe they're not short sponsors and maybe they're not showboating. Maybe they're just that quick.
So like we said, testing was going on this week.
Well, for some teams, the last test.
Yes, the last test before kicking off in Australia, but a couple of teams, I think four, are carrying on this week in Jerez.
They're squeezing in one last test. I think, but here's the thing, and I'm not entirely sure if I'm accurate on this, and maybe the live comments will correct me, but I believe any team who finished their test on Thursday, that was the last test, and that is the last time they're allowed to test that car in an official test until January the 1st, 2010. That's the end. Unless any of the teams go back on this agreement, that's testing done for the rest of this year.
Why do these four teams, Braun, Renault, McLaren and Williams, get to test some more then?
Well, I think they're smart, actually. The reason that six teams are not doing it is because the official FOM transport leaves before the end. Well, today, is it? It must be pretty much before this next test finishes. So if you want to be on the Bernie plane, which is the cheapest way to transport your stuff to Australia, you have to be done with testing and loading your cargo onto the transporter, either to go now or to go very shortly. The other four teams who have decided that they really, really need this track time and it's really, really important, they have to make their own way and pay for their own transport. Now, not a very good way to save money, not a very good cost-saving measure.
So Bernie provides transport, but if you stay and test in Jerez, you've missed the transport, so you've got to weigh up the cost of getting a little bit of extra testing in.
Yeah, and hassle, not just cost.
Yeah. A little bit of extra testing versus the cost of getting on Bernie's plane.
Yes. I don't know whether you also incur additional problems with jet lag and whether or not your team are less focused as a result. I presume it's not a huge problem. I remember Barrichello had to do it for Ferrari a little while ago when they brought in some super special Bridgestone tyres. I forget what year it is, but at the end of the... they wanted to squeeze in one last test and they flew the guy all the way back from Australia to Fiorano. That he did a bit of a test, okayed the tyres, then they flew back to Australia, and he was absolutely
knackered.
Shattered.
Yeah.
So whether or not these teams are going to suffer, whether the personnel are going to be suffering, I presume it's a test team, they won't be the same people going out, but, you know, some of them will be. The drivers especially. The drivers have got less time to acclimatise to the Australian weather, and they're basically stuck in European time zone and European weather. So it may, you know, it may affect them a little bit.
Well, it seems like McLaren have made a good decision to go, although they didn't test today, I think. On Sunday.
Right, yeah.
They were there, but they didn't do anything. But we'll get onto that in a minute. Because they're quite slow and they admit that they may have problems.
Now, take you back to the straight line tests we were talking about. McLaren,
you're not going to say I told you so, are you?
No. Well, here's the thing. There were rumours abound that Renault were running straight line tests. They turned up to a straight line session at Kemble with five transporters, and it was a big hoo-ha that Renault had aero trouble. Then they started using Flovis and we were all panicked about it. McLaren came along, they did a similar test with a similar number of personnel. They also started using Flovis. Wasn't so much of a panic about McLaren. However, it does look like as time goes on they may have some aero issue with the rear end. However, it could just be the ultimate form of sandbagging.
But they've come out and admitted it, which you just wouldn't expect. If it was sandbagging, then they go slow. And I mean, Ron Dennis said, oh, no, there's no problem. You know, it doesn't matter. It's testing. It doesn't mean anything until we get to Australia. And then 2 days later, Martin Whitmarsh comes out and says, yeah, we've got a problem. I mean, that's just embarrassing.
It is, but it's a story. It's generating a story. Now, I don't know what they're doing, whether Vodafone want more press out of it, or whether they literally just think they might be able to generate. What they've done now is they've created a situation where all eyes will be on them in Australia for every practice session in qualifying and in the race. Now, that's not a bad thing to have if you happen to have a really, really fast car.
Yeah, if it's slow. it's going
to
be bad.
And they've still got time to fix the problem and say, ah, you know, we were slow, but we solved it and it's all fine. So maybe they're doing some headline grabbing. I'd be amazed if all that money and all the resources that McLaren have couldn't make a semi-decent car. To make a car that looks as bad as it their MP24 currently looks is quite unforgivable.
Another team admitting they've got some problems, Toro Rosso. They launched their new car and straight onto the track at the test.
Yep.
And yeah, it didn't do very well. It broke.
Surprisingly, although I guess what they've got is newest type packaging and Ferrari's engine, and they could have some potential fueling issues there, although it seems unlikely that they wouldn't have been prepared for that. I am concerned that they've left it very, very late, because Toro Rosso are not a team who are extending their test by a couple more days. And they launched the car. They had, 4 days worth of running, some of which was curtailed by reliability problems.
They had to sit out most of a day. I think one day they got 20 laps in between two drivers.
Sure.
And they had to sit the rest because they were waiting for parts from the factory.
No in-season testing. They have done a lot of work with last year's car. Buemi's been going around considerably during the off-season, and Bordet's had some car time too. They are going to Australia as one of the least prepared teams, which is surprising given that Force India left it so late and Braun weren't even supposed to be on the grid. How have Toro Rosso been able to arrive with so little preparation? That's a bit of a surprise and a bit of a shock to me.
What I do like is they've launched the new car and it's broken and it's not Bordet's fault. Woohoo!
He didn't crash it this year.
He actually said, I think in some of the launch stuff, he said that they were doing better this year because the car is out before the season begins, which is progress. But when you haven't got the in-season testing, you need that time, don't you?
Yeah, the last time they did bring, they brought the car in halfway through the year. They had time to crash it and fix it and do some more preparation. And, you know, and they still weighed up all the odds. And then did they bring the car to Monaco? I can't remember which race they turned up with the new car, but they had time to work on it and be prepared. This time they've basically got nothing. It's all been stuck on a transporter. It's going to arrive in Australia and they've got to race with what they've got. They know the chassis is good. In the Red Bull configuration, they know that Newey's done a fantastic job. It looks awesome, and Webber and Vettel have been doing pretty decent times, so it's a solid chassis. It's the first car, I think, Toro Rosso were doing a pretty heavy job of bigging up the fact that they're actually building this one. They've done the layout work, they've put the car together.
Yeah, they made a point of mentioning the fact that they're bringing people into the design department, aren't they?
Well, that's new people. Potentially inexperienced people, guys who've not been used to working together. That could bring in some kind of reliability problems, stuff that they've never had to deal with before.
They certainly seem to want to distance themselves from the whole customer car thing.
Yes, they need to make themselves saleable as their own entity if Dietrich's plan is to sell them at the end of this year, which he said that's what he wants to do. He's brought the team back for that reason. And it looks like they're building up everything they need to do to make sure that they're not a customer, they're not running customer cars next season. However, there's got to be some kind of changeover period and learning period when that happens. And I am worried that they may be the backmarkers of this year.
I also wanted to mention Ferrari because Stefano Domenicali has said that their own performance is good and the team are all ready to race. So I'm assuming he means no silly pit stop mistakes.
Right, the team.
Yeah, but reliability is their main concern. Now, I don't know if that means we are worried about reliability or if they're just saying everything else is fine, so reliability is the only thing we've got to worry about.
Right, so the chassis is perfect, the engine is perfect. We're absolutely confident with our pit stop team and our lights, which they are running. We've seen them test them. We assume they're going to run the lights.
The traffic lights.
From the off. Although they have been doing a little bit of lollipop testing too, so they've got the option to do that. Reliability, I guess, is a concern. But then I would say for them, KERS has to be the biggest concern. If they're not running it, that's not a problem. If they do decide to run it, that, for me, would be their biggest concern.
They did have some cooling problems, didn't they? During testing, they stopped a few times on track.
They were stuck out on track on a couple of occasions. And I think on one or two occasions, I've seen the car in the barrier. So, yeah, a couple of people have been having offs.
So coming back to McLaren, they are at Jerez today and for the next few days. I think all the teams are there for 3 or 4 days. I'm not sure exactly. But they didn't do any running today at all. They were sitting in the garage waiting for parts.
Right.
Now, is that because they are broken parts and they need replacing, or are they waiting for some really exciting new
super special
some kind of great wing that's going to fix everything,
bins and wings and stuff? I don't know. It's concerning because, well, it depends where you look at it, because what you've got is a team who are not concerned about reliability. If they don't need to be running round and round in circles just putting mileage on parts, that's fine. You know, that bit, you can take that bit off. We know the engine's good because it's going fast in the Braun. So the Mercedes is fine. The drivers must be confident because they don't need to put more mileage on the car. They don't need feel the need to be going around in circles all day. That's also good. McLaren must have something very specific in mind. I'm surprised that they didn't have it ready for today.
Well, Ollie's just said in the comments, McLaren are running their pre-planned schedule of Monday through Thursday, apparently. So if it was already planned, that's fine. But then aren't they just wasting a day?
Yeah.
I don't. Because if everyone else is out today and they were allowed out, you want to get as much as you can.
There is a limited amount of mileage. And the only thing I can think, then this is something else we haven't mentioned, actually. I don't know how close teams are to their mileage limit, which they had in testing. And therefore, that some of the teams may have run out of available miles and just may not be able to test this week, which is
true.
Something that hadn't come to mind.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's the case. I haven't actually been keeping up on who's done how many miles, and I'm not sure anyone else has. But McLaren may be slightly limited. I think they did some 2010 running for Bridgestone. Was it last week or the week before? So that was a day in hand. That was effectively a free day of testing, and that didn't affect their mileage limit. But maybe they're running a little bit tight, and they want to make sure only the new parts have the maximum amount of running.
Barrichello was going fast again today.
Right.
Just carrying on the trend. And I think also Alonso had a bit of an off in the morning. Collided with a barrier.
Yeah, calls the team
a red flag and
everything. Endless amounts of work. Was it the front suspension was damaged? They had to put it back together.
Yeah.
Amazingly, the mechanics did get it fixed and the guy did get out before the end of the day. Clearly, that wasn't in their plan. Not an ideal situation to happen.
Will that be a major setback, or is it just... it just means that they've lost that time?
I would suggest right now it probably is a major setback because they felt the need to do more testing. The car blows hot and cold. Sometimes it's quick, sometimes it's slow. It doesn't look like it's meant to be fast. They may need to do more work on it. It doesn't look like a race winner, and I suspect that Alonso might have done his own championship hopes some harm with that accident.
In the comments, Jackie's just come up with some great figures. We now know about the testing mileage.
Okay.
So the limit is 15,000.
Okay, kilometres.
Yes.
We have BMW on 7,209 kilometres, Ferrari on 6,998 kilometres, Toyota with 6,615 kilometres, Williams with 4,716 kilometres, McLaren 4,146 km, Renault 3,797 kilometres, Red Bull 3,280 kilometres, and Force India with 1,005 km.
I'm very surprised that McLaren and Renault are so far down the list.
Yes. I mean, Force India, not at all surprising.
Although that is a really low number, you know, compared to the others.
Yes. Well, they've had, what, 7 days worth of testing. Clearly, no one's anywhere near it. So all the teams could have, and I would say should have, done this extra testing. I know it's expensive. I know it wasn't in the budgets. I think
if they all did it, Bernie's plane would be empty.
That would be funny, wouldn't it? They so should have done that.
It might be quite amusing, but I don't know. Maybe he would, if they all did it, maybe he would put it back for all of them.
No, I wouldn't have thought so because it's chartered flights. I mean, he's got his truck, his stuff's on there. Bernie's stuff's on there, FOM stuff on there. FIA have all their transporters on the same thing. So no, he would have just gone. He'd probably been annoyed, but he would have gone. Mind you, he still got paid. No, they should have done that. That's what they should have done. Just no one got on the FOM plane.
So I think we can safely say that we haven't learnt much from testing, really.
Well,
most of the teams have been quite anonymous.
Opens up a lot of question marks. But what it does do, okay, yes, we haven't learnt a number, you know, there's nothing concrete we can say this or no. That. However, it sets up Melbourne beautifully, doesn't it?
It really
are
does.
Are you excited now? Are you psyched up?
None of us have any idea what's going to happen. Braun look like they're going to be fast. McLaren look like they're going to be slow.
It's all topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
Even the bookies are throwing crazy kind of odds at Formula One names for who's going to win in Melbourne. We just don't have a clue. And that's good. I don't remember the last time it was this mixed up. New rules, new regulations will do this for us. And to that end, I do salute them. Fantasy
Racers. So this is the very last time we're going to do a Fantasy Racers roll call.
Oh, it's getting that close.
Yes, but I should say it's not too late to join the group. All the information you need is on sidepodcast.com.
Oh yeah, there's a button on the sidebar.
We still want you to join.
Yep. Many, many people continue to join throughout the season.
Yes.
So don't even think, even if Melbourne's come and gone, it's not too late to join in.
Oh God, no. People were beating me and they joined six races late.
They were doing that, yes. However, yeah, if you can do it before Melbourne, you're going to have a little bit of an advantage over everybody else. All the drivers are in there now. You've got Button and you've got Barrichello. Braun GP officially confirmed, so now you can pick from the full grid. Scuderia Utopia.
11 Benevolent Elephants.
Truly Amazing.
Team Zoom Zoom.
Mini Alice F1.
He threw 3 free throws.
F1 at the Glen.
GGB Racing.
High Roller.
Ferret Wheels.
Kitsun Racing.
Rascability F1.
Pole Dancers.
Shumi Who.
Bluebell.
Less Geek Racing.
Newport Race.
Newport Racing.
Roadkill Racing.
Supercalifragilistic Racing.
Alfa Romeo Racing.
Step On It.
Wildly Inappropriate Racing.
High Fives and Down Lows.
Alvarez F1.
T&M Racing.
What does Scuderia mean anyway?
Superheroes Racing.
F1 MGMT.
555 Images.
Black Beauty.
History on Speed.
Bigger Hammer Repair Service.
Yitzi Jam.
Apex IT Racing.
Lightning F1.
No F1 Clue.
Off the Pace Racing.
Inner Pickle Racing.
Mexico GP.
RGR Racing.
Dollar Dug Racing.
Pugnacious Racing.
Family Circus.
Brawntastic.
I Know Diddly Squat.
Pit Lane Fanatic.
Convoy Bus to Luxor Nile.
Cognito Ergo Sum.
Swiss Miz GP.
Slap the Yak.
Shining Big Guns.
Shiny Little Fishes.
Kings of the Kurz Age.
So that wraps up all of our teams at this point in time.
Yeah.
Now all the drivers are there. The money is set. We can make our decisions. You're going to make some decisions?
I am going to make some actual decisions, but not quite yet, I don't think.
Really? Mm. When are you going to make the decision?
I might wait until these four have finished their testing.
Okay.
And then
sounds
have
like a good plan. Next week, we start our proper Fantasy Racers coverage in earnest.
Yep.
With a breakdown, a very quick look at some quick stats of who's chosen what, how much money they've spent, who's been thinking it through, and who's not bothered. So if you haven't got around to picking your team, I can understand if you want to wait till Melbourne Free Practice 1, Free Practice 2. Fine, fair enough. However, if you go ahead and pick your team now,
you might get a mention
next week.
Feedback. Hello, Christine. This is Jordan here calling. I have a few things on my mind. One of them is the new USF1 team. Obviously, I'm very excited for it. I don't live in the United States, I live in Canada, but I still think it's pretty cool to have this another new team in F1. I think it's really cool. And it'll be interesting to see how they do. Everyone's wondering about drivers, but it'll be interesting to see. They have a few drivers in mind who they wouldn't mind to have. That'll be interesting. As well as the beginning of the F1 season's coming up. Pretty stoked beyond belief about that. The cars are kind of, you know, I don't know. They're okay, but I don't know. I'm going to have to take a while to get used to them.
I had to cut it off there because Jordan left his predictions for Australia, which obviously I want to use in the Australia montage.
Okay, so what he's basically saying is it's going to take him a little while to get used to them, but he's getting there.
Yeah.
Which is kind of how we are, but you're still miffed
about
the wings.
I'm still against the wings. I found a picture this week that I really like of the Toyota.
Yes.
2009 Toyota, because the grass cuts off the bottom of the picture and the picture cuts off at the back wing. So that's my favourite. I also thought it was interesting what he said about USF1, that he's really excited about it in Canada.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's
so
good.
It's crossing the border.
The whole of North America can get behind that idea. And, you know, as we've said before, it may help bring back the Canadian Grand Prix. It's a long way off. There was talk, I think, this week from Martin Whitmarsh. He was saying that basically they really need to get the US Grand Prix back on the calendar. It's very important to them, even if they have to go around Bernie to do it. Now, that would be interesting. That would really make or break Vota, I think, to organise a race without Bernie, without his permission, without his say-so, without his backing.
Then you start crossing into the breakaway series, don't you?
Yeah, that's strong words. They were very, I mean, there was a very large press release and it was right at the bottom. He said it, and essentially, we may have to go our own way, but we're going back to North America, which is fantastic news for fans in America and fantastic news for us, especially if they can get back to Canada.
I'm very happy because I asked for more voicemails and I got them because I've got another one for you. This one is from Nigel.
Okay.
Hi Side Podcast, this is Nigel Mack from Northamptonshire. Really looking forward to the season this year, particularly from the Fantasy Racers point of view. And because of Fantasy Racers, I actually have something I want to say. I can't believe they changed all the rules about driver efficiencies and driver budgets and driver costs and all that kind of stuff, because I had all my strategies worked out based on last year and I was going to win this year, and now they've changed it all.
Nigel's doing a bit of training. I like it. I can understand what he's saying about Fantasy Racers, because the best thing about it last year, it was damn simple to use. I don't think it makes it too much more complicated. Do you? Are you more confused by it this year?
Well, I haven't
looked into it that far because I haven't picked my drivers yet. So I haven't gone too far into it. I think perhaps the budget thing may be a little bit more confusing, but I did ask for that. I wanted that to come in. Yeah. So, but I think it might add a little bit of interest to it as well for those people who wanted more from it.
Yeah. If we're doing it again this year, it's nice to add a certain variable. I guess newcomers might find it a little bit more difficult. But loving the Tremaining. Absolutely love it. We need more Tremaining and we need more voicemails, and that's brilliant. So looking forward to more next week.
I had a lot of emails this week, so you're going to have to bear with me because they were all really good. This one is from Keith the Marshal. He said, I'm so excited now. I feel sick. 3 weeks to go. I'm really looking forward to the season ahead. New rules, new cars. No one has a clue what's going on. It's great. You guys are pumping out all sorts of different programs. It is going to be a seriously brilliant year. I think I will be supporting Red Bull this year. And yes, team Mrs. the Marshal is the better half. I don't mind if she beats me, but if she does and then gloats about it, there may be trouble.
Ooh.
The fight is on.
It's kind of like them. It's like you and I, really, isn't it? Don't mind you taking part, but don't beat me. It's exactly the same.
And this is an email from another Keith. He said, Dear Mr. and Mrs. Christine, as you guessed, I don't contribute to the online F1 community as family and career commitments take up most of my time. I do, however, have 1 or 2 hours per day sitting in traffic to listen to podcasts. Unfortunately, I only got around to listening to your episode 94 yesterday, so I was unable to take Bassano up on his offer to get together for drinks.
Oh, wow.
If you get a moment, would you please apologise to him for me and let him know that if he ever makes it back to Phoenix, I'll buy the first round.
Oh, Keith.
Sincerely, Keith Basil.
Oh, that's
Keith
awesome.
In Phoenix. So your matchmaking didn't work this time, but it will work in the future.
I'm sorry. I totally wasn't thinking down that line. And I was thinking
that was a surprise for
that
you.
That was a... That's brilliant. Thank you, Keith. Thank you for getting back to us. That's just amazing. He must have some time to commit to the F1 community because he put himself on the map.
Yes.
And we wouldn't have known that he was there. So many thanks for putting your pin in the map. And
getting back to us.
Brilliant.
Ben said, Christine, I wanted to continue the conversation regarding the lack of HD for F1. As a longtime Formula One fan, I find it completely unfathomable that Formula One is not broadcasting in high definition. I recall reading that Bernie had mandated HD broadcasts by the 2009 season, this coming at the end of the 2006 season. Here in America, I can watch pretty much every sport in high def, baseball, basketball, football, NASCAR, tennis, horse racing, IndyCars. They're all telecast in HD, and many have been for many years. Then he breaks out the caps and says, why on earth is the world's most sophisticated sport still not available in high definition? Thanks, Ben. It's a good question.
It's a simple one to answer. Money. Because Formula One is managed in a different way to most other sports, and Bernie and CVC have this controlling interest, they're only bothered about a return on their investment, and they want to make sure that if they're going to invest in HD, enough people are going to pay for it. Reading between the lines, I do wonder if the BBC made an offer and that offer wasn't enough, and maybe Bernie wants more television companies to contribute to the HD pot, and that's why we're stuck with it, basically, because of the way Formula One is organised and managed and the way the commercial entities work together. They're not interested in how we watch Formula One. They're only interested in how much it costs them and how much they can make from broadcasting.
In the comments, though, Andy says HD is overrated, so not everyone wants it.
There's an argument that Ben points out that every other sport has it. Formula One is supposed to be technology driven. You have sponsors like Panasonic involved in Formula One, and they make high definition televisions. I'm sure they're really miffed that Formula One, they're not able to broadcast Formula One in that way. Toyota are thus far the only team, notably, to give us a high definition video, and that I'm sure that's not coincidental. So there is the commercial and the competitive argument to it. I don't know. We don't have a high-definition television, and we would have to invest in one if Formula One went HD because we wouldn't want to miss out. And so I'm sort of grateful that we don't have to spend that money this year. What's your take on it?
I think that I have noticed the difference in programmes, but I'm not sure it would make that much difference when things are moving so fast as Formula One. It's good for close-up faces and things like that, but I'm not sure that the difference is enough to promote bringing it in very quickly.
Yep.
But that being said, if television is going that way and there are elements of Formula One that, you know, would want to be at the forefront of television broadcasting,
don't want to be
then
left
they
behind.
Should bring it in, yeah.
Good call.
As long as it doesn't exclude anyone, then there's no reason why not to.
It will, almost certainly be optional.
And my final email is from Ian. He says, hi, I found Side Podcast last year when I joined the iPod generation. Love the shows. It's a good laugh as well as covering the fun of F1. I guess I should really get involved, but I'm never organised enough. Well, we're never organised, that's silly. Have to say, the new cars are rather ugly. Although the McLaren and Williams are reasonable, the latter spoiled by the paint, and the Red Bull's not too bad. It's a shame, though, that the designers have forgotten the looks. Let's be honest, some F1 cars over the years have been beautiful museum pieces, wheeled out for shows all over the world. Somehow, I doubt that will happen to this year's mob.
Fair point.
It's a good point. But people are starting to say that this year's cars, and then you look at last year's cars, and you're like, oh my God.
Well, yeah, the old cars look old very quickly. Doesn't mean that the new ones look better. They just look more modern. The problem is the rules and regulations were developed by engineers and not designers. It wasn't anyone with an eye for good-looking cars. They weren't involved. And that's where the root of the looks come from.
It's interesting that when we first saw the 2009 cars, it was like, oh my God, they're so retro. But now they're the modern cars, and, yes, and the other ones are old.
I am personally grateful that we don't have the centerline downwash generating wing that Max proposed, which was a rubbish idea. It was never going to happen, but it was threatened, and we could easily have Formula One cars with a great big split down the middle and basically two smaller rear wings behind each wheel, and that would look ridiculous. And I'm just grateful that we at least have one central rear wing.
Housekeeping.
If you're listening to the recorded version of this podcast, you may have missed, and it may have escaped your attention, that yesterday we had a bit of a chat with Joe Sayward from GrandPrix.com. We've mentioned him many, many, many a time on this podcast in the past. He has a great website. He's a great Formula One journalist. He's been in and around the Formula One paddock for many, many years. He has amazing insight. It's a really good chat. It was very nice of him to give us some of his time, a very busy period in his life. He's getting ready to go to Australia. If you haven't checked it out, please listen to it, because it's just brilliant. It was amazing. The chat overran. It was probably about 100% longer than we planned it to be. And we couldn't help but continue talking. It was such a great conversation. Please do check it out if you haven't already.
Next week, there's a race on that I know nothing about at Sebring, and I'm calling it Le Sebring.
It's a sports car race.
Yeah.
And Bourdais is driving.
He is.
He's committed to it. He's in the Peugeot.
Not just Bourdais, though.
Who else?
Frank.
Okay.
Yay.
So you really are going to follow this.
Yep.
We don't
12 hours, I think it is.
We don't do sports cars.
Well, we did live comment Le Mans.
Right.
Last year because Frank was driving.
Okay.
And we probably will again this year because Frank and Le Seb are driving.
And the Sebring test is a precursor to Le Mans. It's a test for Le Mans, right?
Well, it's a 12-hour race, but Peugeot that Frank and Bourdais are driving for, they say it's just testing for Le Mans, which might be a bit disappointing, but it'll be good to see them anyway. So we will be live commenting that. It starts at 10:30 a.m. Eastern time.
Okay.
So I don't know what that is time.
There's a bit of a confusion because the way...
Daylight savings and things.
Changing.
It's on Saturday the 21st and we will be live commenting it.
So join us on sidepodcast.com for that.
If you're interested.
And if we're still awake, there might be another debrief show and another panel next Sunday.
Yes.
The final one before we go racing.
Before it starts.
Oh, come on.